Welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, the host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Always buying and selling rare coins and precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, palladium. We're always buying old scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, even dental gold. Gold nuggets, you name it. Anything that's gold, we kind of want it. We don't always resell it in that form. We melt a lot of stuff down. We make things out of it. And we've even bought, back when all the gangsters would wear gold grills in their mouth. I know it sounds kind of gross, but we actually bought a couple of those with diamonds in them. Makes a guy look real pretty with that on. We had one guy, I'm kind of a storyteller, I know. We had one guy come in, actually, clean. I mean, not what you'd expect. He'd had two, if you want to call them rings made out of gold. They're not rings. They were literally the size of his knuckles, the whole face of his knuckles. It was, one of them was the state of Washington. And for the major highways and roads, he'd use diamonds and rubies and like the Emerald City. He had an emerald, and I don't remember Spokane, Lilac City. I can't remember what he had, but it was quite extravagant. It was, the gold in it alone was like 10 ounces. I mean, it was unbelievable. And on the other one, he had JC, the letters JC, massive, probably 6 ounces of gold for Jesus Christ. It was a Christian guy, black guy, actually pretty clean cut, and wasn't gangster related. Just said at one time it's something he wanted, and another time he decided it's something he didn't want anymore, so he came in and sold it. So we've seen some pretty odd stuff come through over time. I've pretty much anything you can do with gold, I suspect we've seen. We bought a belt one time that was $20 gold pieces attached all the way around the belt. Probably, I think there was about 47 or something, 57 $20 gold pieces in the belt. And all the belt that held it together was solid gold, probably 100 ounces of gold in that. That's a pretty serious belt. And the guy actually wore it. He was a wealthy cowboy. And on top of it all, so he had a belt that was $20 gold pieces all the way around his waist in big old gold bezels, each one of them overlapped. And then the buckle was huge, of solid gold. Unbelievable. Not something you'd catch me wearing, we'll put it that way. So needless to say, we buy gold. And we also buy coins and collectible coins, numismatic coins, precious, you name it. It's hard to believe the stuff we have. A lot of people think we just buy gold and silver and it's that simple. It's not quite that simple. The real aspect of this business, frankly, or the real technical side, is coins. There's literally, over the years, centuries, millennia, there's been many, many millions of different coins made. And we've had a lot of them through the shop. We know a lot of them pretty well. Of course, a lot of them are foreign. There's some neat stuff that's been made over the years, but we buy everything. And one thing people don't realize, coins don't get thrown out in general. Okay. So they're out there somewhere. So someone will find one silver dollar in their drawer and they don't know much about it and they think they're rich. And then you'll get a couple that, comes from an old ranch family, and they'll come in with 3,000 silver dollars. They understand that, they're scarce but not rare, and there's just all a large variation of how things come into us. But we're always buying and we're always selling. We believe we know the market very well. We know the products very well, and I think it's fair to say that when it comes to building portfolios, we do a pretty good job of stuff that you're just going to stuff away. Another thing that's kind of interesting is, we get people coming in regularly with, I guess if you want to call it, investment portfolios or whatever, items they've bought from other companies. and they have commission salespeople, and so unfortunately, profit is their primary driver. Now, you might think, well, profit's your primary driver too, Kevin. I mean, you're in a business. Well, obviously, we got to make it, but our goal, we take what we do very seriously. We take your financial well-being very seriously. We take your money very seriously. We don't take it lightly. We don't play games ever. And we sell stuff at wholesale. I mean, literally, what's important to me is I try to price things based on what fair market value. In other words, what it's really worth, liquid. Like, if you went to sell it, what's it worth? That's our driver when we price stuff. And we bought an estate here recently, and we were looking at what the guy paid for stuff, and I was saying, can you believe this? I mean, these companies are literally marking up stuff 50 to 100%. And this guy had spent, I'd say, $1 million. In fact, the family said he spent about $1.5 million. And wow, sad. It's sad. And I always hate talking about that stuff because ultimately it reflects on our industry as a whole. As I've said before, I've had people come into my shop that have heard me on the radio, and they apparently forget where they've heard the information, and they literally will come in and try to use what I've educated them about on the show against me and try to accuse me of, you know, or verify whatever that we're not one of them or whatever. And it's knowledge they wouldn't have had I not given it to them. I assure you, I wouldn't educate you on all the woes of this industry if we were practicing business that way. I wouldn't be able to live with myself. When it comes down to just really good, fair quality pricing on coins, I really don't. I think we've got everyone beat hands down. Even when we sell online, our prices are just fair. They're so much below anybody else's. Because we just have these tight, thin little margins. That's just the way we operate. It's our philosophy. We grade things properly. We know what we're doing. We just, you know, and over the years, we've made mistakes. Obviously, there's always a learning curve, but I've had employees make mistakes both ways. I mean, I've literally had coins that I've sold to people and bought back later and realized that I graded them too low, too conservative, and should, you know, could have been a lot looser and the coin could be worth a lot more. But as time goes on and I say we become experts, I think we're pretty accurate and pretty good at what we do. Our intention is integrity, and I don't want to beat that can for too long, but I think you get my point. And I do think that our industry provides a substantial form of investment and wealth and capital preservation. It's a great way to go. It's a good thing to keep. You can't keep cash. You can't keep money. You gotta, you know, your money's gotta be somewhere doing something, right? I mean, there's going to be ups and downs in every market. There's absolutely no doubt right now. There's some ups in the Dow, crazy ups. And frankly, it would be great if you could have got in on that early and you were capitalizing on it. But it's certainly not the time to get in now. The sad thing is that people tend to jump into markets like that when things are roaring, as they have. And so you get to a point where the upside is so much lower potentially than the downside. Okay. So your risk just becomes gross. It becomes abstract, absurd, overbearing, too much. You get my point, I hope. And so you get to the point where it's nice that some of these stocks have gone up substantially and whatnot, but you basically don't want, you don't want to get greedy or crazy and try to jump into this stuff at this point in time. It's absolutely not, it's not a good idea. It's not wise. You just don't do it, okay? Greed should never drive any financial decision. You buy or invest, whatever you want to call it, to preserve your wealth. You want to save your money. It's a concept that's been around for a long time. Wealth and capital preservation. It's not this, oh man, I want to get this stock that blows up and goes through the roof. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, I know people that are substantially wealthy, and they, when they get really wealthy and they got a ton of money, millions and millions of dollars burn a hole. They, a lot of times the big hot thing right now, you know, for a while it was flipping houses and everybody's flipping houses. So there's no money left in it at all. I mean, none. I've had people come to me and say, well, we're going to buy this house and we're going to rent it out. And it's like, do the math, folks. It ain't going to work. It's really foolish to hang yourself out with a liability of that proportion with the absolute risk of making nothing or losing money. And people always think real estate's such a great asset. Well, it is an asset, but it is not liquid at all. Okay. Trust me, I've owned a substantial amount of real estate, and it's just not something that you can easily liquidate. As much as I wish I could tell you otherwise, I'd love to, but it's just a fact of life. You can't liquidate real estate quickly. And there's, you know, there's a lot of things like that out there. When it comes to coins, they're immediately liquid. They're quick. And I'll tell you, on a bounce here, one of my spectacular bounces, cryptocurrency, right? The old Bitcoin. Man, I'll tell you something. I was doing some reading on that stuff today. Cryptocurrency crunch. So what's going on with cryptocurrency? What's going on is there is a CNBC, I think it was, article on the cryptocurrency situation that is not good. They're basically, there's a SEC freeze or froze of frozen assets. And so basically there's an ICO, an initial cryptocurrency offering. One of the largest cryptocurrency offerings ever from this place called Arise Bank out of Texas. Apparently, they're breaking all these SEC regulations, in other words, trading, and they announce that they've obtained a court order to halt and freeze the assets of Arise Bank's initial crypto coin offering. The Dallas-based firm claims to be a decentralized bank and says it raised $600 million. Arise Bank announced Thursday it was correcting an announcement made the prior week about the acquisition of an FDIC-insured bank, which was a lie, obviously. So basically what's going on here, they're saying that they got $600 million of a billion-dollar goal and that those assets were in the form of Bitcoin, Litecoin, BitShares, Dogecoin, BitUSA, whatever it is, BitUSD. And there's a big freeze. They froze it up. They said, no, this stuff's getting out of hand. Okay, so get these kind of numbers, folks. They say that there has been, I'll see if I can find this number in the article, fundraisers for projects based on the blockchain technology behind Bitcoin are called token sales or initial coin offerings. They've raised more than $3.7 billion, but more than 10% of those funds have been lost to hackers, according to a study from Ernst & Young, which is a major global accounting firm. And it goes on. Filecoin, which is building a decentralized storage network, raised the equivalent of $252 million. Money, 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 money. You know, all of these are coming apart. The SEC is stating that this is coming to an end. They basically say that they are, it says, they initialized, or SEC has increased its scrutiny of initial coin offerings in the last several months. Last week, Commission Chairman Jay Clayton and Commodity Futures Trading Commission Chairman Giancarlo wrote in a Wall Street Journal article piece, the SEC is devoting a significant portion of its resources to the cryptocurrency market. The commission issued an investor warning in July, temporarily suspended trading in several small stocks due to questions about the claims regarding their involvement, and it goes on and on. And then it basically says that Google and Facebook are, you know, starting to be leery. Facebook won't allow transactions in Bitcoin. And it goes on and on like this. I guess the point is, folks, even Warren Buffett, Mr. Conservative, you know, investor, says cryptocurrency is going to come to a very bad end. It just doesn't work. The problem with it is the currency by which illicit activity is conducted. Ironically, gold is what God made for an anonymous source of wealth, okay? I mean, it's bottom line, true wealth. So they're trying to reproduce it to make more money, okay? Because it's not actually a physical object that you hold and possess. The reason that they are able to have 10% of all Bitcoin transactions hacked and confiscated, or whatever you call it, stolen, that's $370 million, folks. That's a pretty good chunk, right? It is because it's not a physical object. And I think it's important to understand that it's driven by greed. It's driven by everything unbiblical. Everything about it is unbiblical. And it's just not something that God would be involved in. It's just driven by greed and anonymity. We want anonymity. Precious metals offer anonymity. They are true wealth. They go up in stair steps. People got fooled a little bit back in 1980, which is what, almost 38 years ago, with the old Hunt Brothers run on silver. I still have people bring that up as an objection. Being a mathematician and statistician, when you put the history of metals performance into a graph charting program, the mathematical formula actually kicks out the metals boom, if you want to call it, of 1980 under the Hunt brothers. It considers it an anomaly. It won't even show up on a chart, on a long-term trending chart. What do I mean? What I mean is silver shot from like a dollar to $50 an ounce in months at best. And then it crashed, plummeted. It's on a 40-year chart. It's a needle. It didn't exist. It was manipulation. The Hunt brothers were manipulating the market, okay? They, when the Federal Reserve was created, they created a little loophole called the COMEX. Why? The Commodities Exchange was designed for dual-fold purposes. One, primarily to manipulate precious metals prices to discourage people from staying in them. It was a method to try to force people into this new fiat currency. They definitely, kind of like Google. The Federal Reserve never imagined how profoundly, significantly powerful these centralized banks would become. They never even imagined it. And so at first, they started out the right way. They trifled, okay? They introduced in a trickle fashion fiat currency into the system. They left a redeemable in gold clause on many of the notes, on all their notes. And later on said, that was a mistake because we didn't have time to take it off. Yeah, right. So people thought they were going to get redeemed in metals. So they continued to behave with their money as if it was backed by metal. Okay, that puts a pretty serious level of faith in the money. And then they began to introduce and infuse this cash into our system alongside true metals-backed currency until they had so stinking much currency in the system that said it was redeemable in gold. They say the ratio was 33-1 of notes that were redeemable in gold compared to the entire Federal Reserve and U.S. reserves of gold, which were held at Fort Knox. People always ask, is there really gold in Fort Knox? Yes. But the real question isn't whether it's there. It's whose is it? And the U.S. claims it, but it's not theirs. It belongs to the Fed. They've given it all up. FDR was quick to do that. It's important to understand, we really don't have that asset to back us up. Frankly, Congress could seize it at any time if they wanted to, but they don't. They've turned everything over to the Fed. Even if you look at Trump's budget and this whole concept, you know, Trump did his State of the Union speech last night, which is cool. You know, and he, in part of it, he put in that he wanted $1.5 trillion for infrastructure next year. That is a ton of dough. Where is it coming from? Ironically, the left is mad because this is what they want to take claim for. Folks, if you even could comprehend, I don't even know where to go today on this stuff, because if you could comprehend the accomplishments of Trump, wow. You know, I mean, if let me get something up here. See if I can get this for you here. Battling with the computer all the time. Okay, so he has done more in every sector. He has reduced regulation in 1 year more than all other administrations in history combined. He's a businessman. He knows. He knows exactly what is needed. I mean, the guy's sharp. It's so weird that people get so frustrated with him, and I see him so much as a providential placement at a providential time, at a turning crossroads, at a turning point in this nation. After 8 years, 8 brutal, harsh years of Obama, a very angry, really anti-American rhetoric that peaked out in the election of 2016. I mean, folks, in the history of this country, there's never been a time when somebody like Bernie Sanders was considered one of the top contenders, full-blown socialist, absolute full-blown socialist. Hillary Clinton, battling for the left. We've got socialism in America, folks, like never, ever before, never intended. Literally, and I mean literally, would make the founding fathers roll over in their graves. Literally, absolutely so. Just such an extreme. Trump, you know, without getting too crazy on the list, folks, I don't even know where to go because it's so profound. First of all, last night they had the young Kennedy, Joe Kennedy, rebut. He rebutted Trump's State of the Union address, and it was dark, it was dire. It was scary, to be honest. It was, you know, they are belittling and bemoaning and mocking and, as Sean Hannity said, besmirching our president to such a horrendous extreme. It's so dark and it's so bad and it's just so negative and so destructive. And it was what's wrong with America. It was what's wrong with the president. It was so dark and destructive and just acting like they're the biggest victims. When Obama was in office and we'd get the Republicans doing the rebuttal, it was always, here's what we need to do. Here's what's right. Theirs is here's what's wrong. During, I don't know how many of you watched the State of the Union last night. Impressive. Trump's first speech that I've ever seen where he not one time injected his own odd quirks in semantics. He stuck to the transcript. Of course, because he did a great job, then the left was saying, well, that was a speech that wasn't written by him. It wasn't for him. It wasn't him. It was blah, blah, blah. Just destructive, folks. It hurts, okay? You get, like, Joy Reid's comments today about the Trump speech and America. I don't know if you've heard any of this, but it's horrendous. It's absolutely horrendous. She comes out and makes this statement of the fact that she doesn't know what America,
a lot of
Trump
praise,
is talking about. Pretty sad. She says Trump's talking about church. She says church, family, police, military, the national anthem. Trump is trying to call on all the tropes of the 1950s era nationalism. The goal of this speech appears to be to force the normalization of Trump on the terms of a bygone era that his supporters are nostalgic for. Folks, this is the left. Listen to this. Church, family, police, military, the national anthem. Trump's response by Twitter, I think, is here. Apparently, church, family, police, military, and the national anthem are things the left hates. I think we would all be a lot better off if we embraced those values that allowed us to become the greatest nation in the world. Folks, I want you to think about this. What is the left against? They wouldn't stand up last night for God, okay? That's church. Family. They're against the nuclear biblical family. You know, you have to be a transgender, homosexual, etc., right? You got to have two transgendered homosexuals. You got to have one man who's been had a sex change to a woman that's with another man who's gay, and they have to adopt children. I actually saw a family of transgender kids and adults together. You talk about mental illness. I've mentioned the fact that the suicide rate of transgenders is 40%. So then they say, oh, that's because society oppresses them and they need to have these surgeries. With or without surgery, the suicide rate does not change. It is a mental illness. Why on earth do we want to say it's not? It's one fraction of 1%. Do we just want the votes? Is that it? And then what's with all these? What is this? What are we thinking? Why are we encouraging this sick, nutty, crazy behavior? I've had these people in my shop, and there was one guy in particular, and every time he'd come in, he had bigger breasts, okay, these fake, disgusting breasts. The guy himself was, he didn't look right. And I told him he wants attention. He would come in and intentionally try to shock my customers. And, you know, we were kind to him, but I finally told him, you're not going to do that here. We are not going to tolerate that kind of behavior here. You're not coming in here looking for attention. And I suspect there's probably a high likelihood, because of this Christian radio show, he picked us as a target, thinking that I would perhaps attack him on his transgenderism or whatever. Personally, I could care less. I mean, you know what I mean. That's his business. Each one of us gets to choose what we do with our own body. I am not going to tell you that he doesn't have every right to do that to his body. I don't agree with it. I wouldn't encourage it. And I certainly wouldn't say it's normal, okay? But he has a right to do that. However, when he wants to come into my business and disrupt it just to get in attention, no thanks. So we got church, family, police. Folks, what are we without police? Are we not probably one of the only countries left on earth where our police force is not inundated with corruption? And you know, that kind of stuff comes from the top down, does it not? And then we see what's happening with the seventh floor of the FBI in D.C., with the James Comeys and the Andrew McCabes and these guys that are just literally breaking all the rules, corrupt as can be, sending texts during the election in order to throw the election in favor of Hillary, overlooking states' evidence, failing to turn states' evidence, weaponizing the Department of Justice to throw an election. This is why they have come up with this fictitious rubbish about Russian collusion. And they still even Joe Kennedy's State of the Union rebuttal last night, he said one of his mentions was of a country or an election system knee deep in the Russian government or whatever. I mean, give me a break, folks. You know what the real kicker is? There was no corruption, no collusion whatsoever, period, right? However, even if there had been, it isn't illegal, okay? They just want a reason to impeach Trump. The left is wasting all of this time, and taxpayer dollars chasing this rubbish down. Do people not care how their tax dollars are spent? Do you not think, are they so dumb? You know, they're literally turning up a whole bunch of auxiliary information and convicting people to make it look like they're building a case and, you know, all this garbage to just, you know, Paul Manafort, because he was making money overseas working for the Russians as a consultant, which was always public record, and he was paid overseas and didn't want to bring the money home because the tax rate was obscene. And so he bought stuff, you know, he bought cool, expensive relics and items and then have them transported to the U.S. And so they call it tax evasion, right? But that isn't tax evasion. If you want to launder your money, you don't buy statuettes and art and, you know, that's not good liquid stuff. You can't get your money back out of it very readily. I can tell you from personal experience, I used to be an art dealer. You want junk. I mean, you want illiquid problems. Get into art. Sure, we always hear about the big art auction on the most famous, you know, Mona Lisa, you know, that brings $38 million or $300 million or whatever they bring. That's one out of a gazillion pieces that the magnates have to have so that they have something somebody, you know, else doesn't. And it's one out of, like I said, a gazillion art pieces. You get into art, just like you think you're buying art for $600, $800, $1,000 a pop, not going to work out. There's some pieces, you know, Charles Russell, love him. Western, one of the best Western artists ever out of Montana. His stuff, you know, over the years has done really well, but it's pretty scarce and hard to get and blah, blah, blah. Art's not good. Guys that want to bring millions of dollars into the country, they don't do it in the form of art. If he wanted to launder money, he'd buy diamonds. He'd buy gold, right? He wouldn't buy art and decorations for his house. And then they string him up on this and, you know, General Lynch, because he inaccurately disclosed apparently, you know, some activity he'd done in the past with Russia. It's all Russia, Russia. They want to create the illusion of this collusion. I've been around the block, folks. Trump's arrogance, if you will, about the collusion tells you clearly nothing there. Our police, the top of that FBI, I hope they blow that thing sky high. When you go back to Watergate under Nixon, Mark, I can't remember his name, the director or the assistant director of the FBI, he was Deep Throat. He was the one letting all this information out that wasn't coming out. It was treason. I mean, I've watched the movie on it lately, tried to make him look good. It's treason. The guy was undermining the leadership of this nation, undermining everything strictly for political purposes. I mean, it's a problem. It's bad. Was there corruption there? Yeah. Was Nixon a good president? No. He was terrible. And it's sad that he even became president I think, honestly, with the vetting processes we have now, he could never have done it again. And Watergate was a shame, but it scarred the country. It really did. It led to, you know, a change in politics. We're becoming more and more liberal. The left has controlled the House for, I think they had the House under control for 50-some years. 92 out of 100 years from like 1908 to 2008, the left controlled at least two branches of government. That's why we have the problems we do. They spend all their time while they have the control ruining stuff, burying us in debt, and blaming the right for something the right's never had control over. This is the first time we've had all three branches of government. I can't remember in how long. I don't know that statistic, but I think it's real rare. And Trump's doing some good things. There is no doubt in my mind that God is behind this man. It's just they couldn't believe he won. It had to be collusion. They couldn't accept it. That's why Hillary comes out with a book called What Happened. Why? Because he labeled her Crooked Hillary Clinton. She can't. Her arrogance is just, it's eating her alive. It's killing her. She just cannot leave well enough alone. She didn't get her way, and she's mad, and she wants to run again, and the left doesn't want her. And she's looking back, wishing she did this and wishing she did that. But she got pummeled by Trump, and that happens in life sometimes. That's how you learn. But it certainly didn't make her a better person, I can tell you that. I can certainly see that. It's pretty obvious that it did not. So enough of that. Church, family, police, military. Folks, if you watch our military, wow, okay? I've got some friends and connections in the military, wow. I mean, no one's like us, right? You go watch, you know, North Korea's guys, they all march together in this big fancy, you know, pattern, and they do. But, you know, you see our guys, you see film, they're all dressed, their faces aren't covered up. You look at terrorists, they all got black masks on. Why? Because they're doing evil, right? Someone who does evil has to hide their face. Our guys' faces are showing. We're out doing individual tactical maneuvers. We don't run around in big groups of hundreds because you get killed that way. Our military is trained the best. They have the best equipment. And I'm telling you, when they come for you, you got a problem. And even now with Trump, he has absolutely eradicated, annihilated, in his words, ISIS. He's done a great job. Our military is critical. The national anthem, think about it. You know, and the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I mean, is that not something? I remember when that got taken out of the schools. Are you kidding me? I mean, great. If you're a Jehovah's, you don't want to pledge allegiance to the flag. Perfect. You got a right. Absolutely. But to basically be instituting this kind of behavior where our celebrities are using their platform, kids basically, who've ridden their whole way to where they're at based on a God-given talent, and people packing stadiums to celebrate that God-given talent, and then to stand there and basically mock God, mock this country, it's sad. They won't stand for God. They won't stand for the nuclear family. They won't stand for police, will they? No, they hate them, right? You know, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. This is what Black Lives Matter were chanting wherever it was, you know, Ferguson or whatever. This is, they hate cops. They hate cops. They don't understand. Now, is there corruption? Yes. Should it be cleaned up? Yes. Does power go to the head of cops? Absolutely. Folks, I've had experiences. I had a cop follow me home a little while ago because I was driving a sports car. He follows me for miles and miles and then, you know, pulls me over. He's got no reason. He's tailgating me so bad that I'm trying to change lanes and get away from him. And then he's telling me, you know, that I'm changing lanes too often. And, you know, I mean, and the guy was terrible. Well, and of course, as I'm discussing this with him, it's being audio and video recorded. So he gets very nervous, but you know, this stuff happens. It's sad. It's a waste of time and taxpayer dollars, and the power can go to their head, and it's sad. And I do think they need to protect and serve. And I don't think that they need to see the citizenry as the enemy. And I do think that there should be marketing campaigns where they actually, instead of, you know, basically what happens is, it's kind of like when you're in a position of power, and you get challenged. And I was one of the youngest managers ever promoted in a bank company that I worked for out of college. I went from hired to being a branch manager a year and a half later in a management training program supposed to last 3 to 4 years. And, you know, I got promoted young. They put me in a situation. They wanted me to restructure a branch. I was young. I came in too hard. I offended people, burned some bridges, cost myself a lot of pain and sorrow. And I learned, you know, that's not how you do it. Okay. So what happens is I had two choices. One, as the challenges rose and I began to alienate people and really make them hate me, I had two choices. Do I lord it over them? Do I continue to bring out the hammer and let that fester and grow until finally they will find a way to take you out? Or do I humble myself and begin to adapt and start to see the humanity of the employees and find ways to develop a system that if they fail, they realize they failed. They don't blame me. And it wasn't my goal that they failed, but it was almost inevitable. So I learn and I grow. But that's what happens with power. When power is challenged, when power is abused and people feel oppressed, it, in my opinion, biblically, it is the duty of the man or woman or person or entity in power to adapt to those people. We've seen it throughout history with kings. We've seen it with Rehoboam, Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, and richest, his son. Everything Solomon wrote was beseeching his son Rehoboam, please understand this. He knew his son was arrogant and cocky and loudmouthed and obnoxious. He begged him, please embrace wisdom, but he wouldn't. Rehoboam was the king of Israel. You know how he died? It says he died. He was drugged down from his horse by a band of scoundrels in Israel, in Jerusalem, and killed. No one came to his rescue. Why? Because he abused his power. The tribe of Judah came to him, and they said, your father put shackles on us, basically, because we did him wrong. Can we have a truce? Rehoboam, if he was wise, would say, absolutely, let's have a truce. But he said, no. My father did that to you. I am going to do far worse. I'm going to make your life so miserable. So he burned all these bridges. He was a fool's fool. And in my opinion, this is the same wisdom that permeates everywhere, whether even the police force. They don't need to ramp up the power. They need to isolate the problem. The Bible's very clear. It says, throw out the scoffer, and out goes quarreling, okay? When you have these rebellious, obnoxious, loud mouths that are just creating rebellion, you get rid of them and make an example of them. Don't make more rules and laws to punish the law-abiding citizen. People will choke under the pressure. It's the same with this taxation nightmare where you have Nancy Pelosi stating, when companies that have 280,000 employees that are giving bonuses now of $1,000 to $2,000 an employee, that's a pretty good chunk of change. And she says, oh, they're just crumbs. You know, they're just irrelevant crumbs. And then Debbie Wasserman Schultz says, you can't buy anything with $1,000 anyway, not if you're filthy rich like they are. Sure, they're right. But you know, so they just want to keep, they want to maintain this power and this control over the people. They're like, you can't have your money back. This is the infusion of socialism into our society. Massively, folks, massively. And we've got to be aware of how rampant this has become. We have got such an influx of socialism at such a level, it's unbelievable. So when Joe Kennedy, who's JFK's, you know, whatever he is, great-great-grandson or whatever, I don't know what it is, gives his rebuttal to Trump's State of the Union address, and I sure hope you heard it. It was very good. I really enjoyed it. I was very impressed. You know, and of course you get these guys doing fact checks and all this kind of stuff, and they take things out of context. It's all rubbish. But basically he goes through and he spells out all of his accomplishments, which is quite candid. I mean, it's quite frank. It's quite impressive. He's done a great job, and he wants to do a better job, and he's the right guy. He is the right guy. I mean, granted, we've discussed all of his shortcomings, but he's doing a good job. You know, he's trying to take care of kids. He's trying to take care of families. He's trying to put money in families' pockets and help them earn a buck in a positive way. He's, you know, he's doing a fine job, right? He's cutting taxes. He's, you know, he's reducing regulations. He's got a number of very impressive accomplishments that I think, frankly, he should be very, very proud of. And I think that no one's ever done anything quite like it before. He's, you know, he's got unemployment at the lowest level it's been in I don't know how long. He's cleaned up, like I said, regulations. He's helping trade to be even. I mean, we have the Grammys the other night. You've got the left sitting there reading this Fire and Fury book, which is absolute trash garbage, a cheap tabloid text, and they're reading this stuff. I mean, sad, just sad. They got Hillary on there. Folks, our disrespect for the president just makes me moan. I'm sorry. So Trump's made good on his campaign promise to pull us out of the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership. He's opened up the North American Free Trade Agreement, worked to bring companies back to the U.S. with terrific tax incentives. He's really worked to promote the sale of U.S. products abroad. He's made enforcement of U.S. trade laws, especially those that involve national security, a huge priority. He ended Obama's deal with Cuba. He's made changes to Obamacare that were, you know, Obamacare was driven by the Cloward and Piven strategy. It's hard for people to understand, but the left, and headed by somebody like Obama, really was dedicated to the destruction of America. People had had it, okay? 9/11 was tough. People didn't like the war that Bush got us into, and I can't argue with it. People were just fed up. Obama made promises he didn't keep. He had a level of charisma that was phenomenal. He came back. He turned out to be very arrogant, very incredibly divisive. He divided this country in a way I'm not so sure. I don't know when we'll recover from it. You know, Trump's helped us with U.S. energy dominance. The Department of Interior, which has led the way in cutting regulations, opened plans to lease 77 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico for oil and gas drilling. He opened up Anwar. Trump traveled the world to promote the sale and use of U.S. energy. He expanded energy infrastructure projects like the Keystone XL pipeline, which Obama snubbed, essentially. Ordered the EPA to kill Obama's clean power plan, which basically put coal and everything out of function. Folks, a lot of this stuff about global warming is absolutely, it's hogwash. It's just another way to control people through utter foolishness. The EPA is reconsidering Obama rules on methane emissions. Trump's done a huge job to protect the homeland. He's trying to get the fence. How about the gate? How about the wall? I'm getting there. He's laid out new principles for reforming immigration. He's announced plans to end chain migration. That's what he did last night. That's where one legal immigrant can bring in dozens of family members, distant as they become. And in these third world countries, they don't even have documentation. They can just say they're a cousin and they're in. He's made progress to build the border wall with Mexico. He's ended the Obama era catch and release. I mean, folks, they catch people and then release them in the U.S. So they're in. And then they go on welfare. He's ending that. He's boosted the arrests of illegals in the U.S., criminals, and of course the media twists that out of control. He's promoted Judge Gorsuch, Neil Gorsuch, which is a great Supreme Court appointment. And let's just hope and pray that another slot opens up before he's out of there and we get some conservative, Bible-believing, God-loving, American-blooded judges. you know, and this racism stuff that's going on. I mean, we're hurting, aren't we? He's removed 36% more criminal gang members than Obama did. He did more, 36% more in the first year of 16 than Obama did in his entire reign. And I can go on and on like this. He's boosted, you know, he's doubled the number of countries participating with our immigration and customs enforcement. He's removed, started the end of the deferred action for childhood arrival. They've got this DACA farce where they're going to deal with DACA. They're not going to send those kids out of here. They never would. But the left has to preempt it and jump forward and make it look like he is. They've got to vilify him all the time. Folks, I believe that this horrendous behavior by the left, I don't know if you watched the State of the Union, but Nancy Pelosi, the old Speaker of the Majority when they were in, her face looked like she had her mouth full of sour, lemons. I mean, it was terrible. They wouldn't stand up for anything. They were rolling their eyes and just showing disdain and disgust the entire time. This is how you want to unite your base? Just through hatred? Is pure hatred the best way to unify? And is that really looking for what's best for America? I don't think so. Trump's helping all these grants to help cops get in the system. I could go down the list. I don't really want to. The opioid epidemic, he's a big fan of that. And I have my own opinions on that. They go from opioid epidemic to how many drug overdose deaths in America. And the overdose deaths aren't necessarily from opioids. There is a heroin problem on the East Coast, apparently. They're lacing it with carfentanil, which is an incredibly potent opioid. They always tell you how powerful it is. They don't tell you that they put in a small amount that makes it equal to heroin. I just know a little bit too much about this stuff, and I know that, you know, heroin addicts don't get sick. Opioids cure the cold. They cure the flu. That's how they used to cure malaria. 5 days of opium and you're cured. I even know a Christian doctor who's a missionary who used that method for years. Still does when he's in Africa. God gave us an opioid receptor in our brain for a reason. We don't have a receptor like that for any other type of drugs. There's a time and a place. Sure, it gets abused because they're genetically modified, etc. But I just think the drug war itself, you put a gun to someone's head and say, look, if you engage in this, you will, you know, you're going to get locked in a cage. It makes for a real dirty, business environment, and bad things happen. And it just, the drug war just doesn't seem to be very productive at all. He's been great with veterans. He's signed this Whistleblower Protection Act to allow senior officials in the VA to fire failing employees and establish safeguards to protect whistleblowers. Before that, folks, it took a year and a half to get rid of somebody. Now they can be gone in 21 days. That's needed to be done. He's had all these online access programs for VA. There's so many people that would commit suicide while they were waiting to be heard by the VA hospital. It was crazy. And most of all, Trump is creating peace through strength. The Kim Jong-un, who was talking all tough until Trump did a display, a military display off of his coast, and obviously did something else to spook him. Now all of a sudden he's trying to show unification with South Korea before the Olympics. obviously something got to the guy. He's building respect for America that America needs. No matter what happens, change is uncomfortable. People don't like it. But good things are coming from this, folks, I'll tell you. John F. Kennedy, I was going to go over a list of to explain. Guys like JFK, he would be a conservative today. His grandson was speaking, but JFK, you know, he cut taxes. He shut Harvard's lip down when they gave him a hard time. He didn't like the war opposition at all. He favored free trade. He was very anti-communist, anti-socialist. He invaded and blockaded Cuba. He escalated American involvement in Vietnam to end it, not to help it or not to hurt. He was a believer in God. He appointed one of the two justices who had dissented during Roe v. Wade. He said abortion was repugnant. The law was the law, you know, even if it meant putting people to death. He was pro-civil rights. He didn't waste money. He wasn't a big spender for the government, except when it came to the military. He was tough on unions. He wanted to reform welfare. He didn't like it. He was friendly to the gas and oil industries. He gave conservative speeches. The press called him a conservative. His friends called him a conservative. Ronald Reagan used him as an example all the time. You get the point, right? This was the left's, you know, poster child. This is how far they've deviated from the way things should be. We've got socialism running rampant, but God bless Donald Trump. Thank you, God, that he's in there. Pray for the man. I think things are going good that way overall. There's things I disagree with, of course, but that's life. Thanks for tuning in. I do appreciate it, folks. Again, I'm running, you know, full throttle here. If you've got money sitting around, I do this at the end of every show. This is my little infomercial, but I'm telling you, let us build your portfolio. I mean, I don't care if you got a few grand savings, you got 10 grand, 20 grand, 2 grand, 1 grand, 500 bucks. I don't care. Give us a call. Let us help you out. We're good at it. We'll build you a great portfolio. I've got the coolest inventory right now I've ever had for investments. The best of the best of the best. It won't last long. A lot of early silver dollars from American, whatever. Thanks for tuning in. Take care. God bless. Have a great week. Bye-bye.